Chapter 3 Robin was cursing himself upside and down. He'd known there was danger of a storm, but he'd slid into games and lost track of the situation. Even Coquette had tried to warn him. Now they were exposed in open countryside with the thunderstorm almost on top of them. If the chaise was struck, it could go up in flames. Then the full force of the rain hit like a drenching sheet, blinding the view through the windows, drumming on the carriage roof. In minutes, the road would be mud. Not long after, a quagmire. They could be literally stuck. If they survived the storm, they could still be locked in place overnight. He stabbed his fingers at the map.
"Nuvion's the next stage," he shouted over the noise. "We'll try for that, but watch out of your window for any kind of shelter."
She looked as terrified as poor Coquette. At least the dog was swaddled, but nothing could protect it from the noise. He let down the window again to shout his orders, commanding all speed. The chaise lurched ahead, but then slid violently sideways. Sister Immaculata bounced into him. Robin caught her. Even though he instantly released her, a jolt that could be lightning of a different sort shot through him. He thought he saw a similar response in her. The coach straightened and hurtled on.
"That could have crushed Coquette," she yelled.
He opened the food hamper on the floor and tugged out a wicker-wrapped wine jug. Then he grabbed the bundle of dog and tucked it into the spot, making sure Coquette could breathe. He closed the hamper, considered the jug, uncorked it, and took a long swallow. Then he offered it to his nun. His nun with shapely legs and deliciously trim ankles. She shook her head, clutching the strap on her door, but still being tossed around, her eyes white-edged with terror. He put down the wine jug.
"Come here."
She shook her head, so he grabbed her and pulled.
"I can brace my legs to keep in place. Yours are too short. Let go."
She surrendered. He held her close with one arm. She clutched his coat for purchase. The chaise hurtled wildly now, with an orchestral accompaniment of cracks, rolls, and rumbles. A dazzling flash was followed by an explosion that felt right on top of them. The coach lurched wildly toward his side, and Sister Immaculata rolled completely on top of him. He cinched her close. He was ensuring her safety, but he'd have to be dead not to notice full breasts pressed against him, with no hint of stays to spoil the fun. A firm bottom was almost under his hand, with no hoops or quilted petticoats to muffle it. He couldn't resist sliding his hand farther south. If heaven's wrath incinerated him now, at least he'd be doing something to justify it. If only she were another sort of wench. Her sheath was mere inches from his blade, and a love joust in a storm could be magnificent. At his touch, she stiffened, bracing her hands to push away. He tightened his hold, lowering his lips close to her ear. "Apologies to your heavenly bridegroom, sister, but I think he prefer me to keep you safe." She squirmed, and a lurch in the other direction slid her astride him. She cried, "Stop it!"
"I have many talents," he laughed, "but controlling the weather isn't one of them." "You know what I mean."
Another blinding light and roar ended her protests. She sealed herself to him with hands and legs, head tucked down as if to make a smaller target. Robin grinned, reveling in the wild power of the storm and the lightning energy between their bouncing bodies. Just how close was he to her secret delights? Did nuns go naked underneath? Or did chastity demand confinement? He'd read that some monks wore tight drawers day and night to guard against self-pleasure. Sometimes they were of leather or even sheepskin. He'd need plate metal to guard against the pleasure of his nun bouncing around his hard cock. He laughed again. He couldn't help it. She looked up at him, wild-eyed, headwear askew. "You're mad!" He kissed her. How could he not? Her parted lips pressed shut, but not immediately. She pushed away again, but not desperately. She was half-willing. He coaxed her lips open, explored her mouth, and began to inch up her skirts. She began to kiss him back. But then she wrenched her mouth away, stiffening, preparing to thrust away entirely. "My apologies, sister," he murmured. "The storm." She stared at him, eyes dark and huge, and then licked those lips. "Oh, don't." "You're afraid too?" she asked. "Very." "It's silly, I know." "Are you calling me silly?" "No, but I don't like storms." "I do. They excite me, but I'll be good." He kissed her temple, hoping it felt soothing. It didn't soothe him. Nothing could soothe him as long as they were locked together like this. But he'd fight armies not to separate. "It's not foolish to fear danger," he said. "My own heart is galloping. See? Feel." He pressed her left hand to his chest. With his waistcoat undone, only his shirt lay between his skin and the heat of her palm. She remained like that, numbly trusting, until she became aware of their position and pushed fiercely away. But then the coach rocked violently to the left, perhaps even sliding toward a ditch. Robin braced for complete disaster, preparing to shield her as best he could, but then it corrected and hurtled on. He hoped the postillion still had command of the horses, but if not, there was nothing he could do now other than ride the wild motion and keep his charges from injury. Sister Immaculata had stopped trying to escape, but she was trying to close her legs without losing safety, wriggling in the process. When she accepted defeat, she was still straddling him, but he was in danger of firing off. And oh, Jupiter, her scent! Earthy, not perfumed, but intoxicating. One day, he would have a perfume designed for her. Nothing heavy or cloying, but not sweet either. Something fresh, even astringent, to be used lightly, very lightly. Perfumed water for her silken underclothes, perfumed lotion for her skin, perfumed oil for her bath, which he would share with her. He needed her breasts in his hands, her nipple in his mouth. He needed to be pounding into her with each jolt of the coach, needed another kind of lightning storm. Maledizione, as she had so aptly said. "Is it over?" she whispered, as if the god of storms might hear. Robin realized the lightning and thunder had definitely moved on, though the rain still pounded and the carriage still rocked. One storm was diminishing, but the other still raged, and she looked so very ripe for love. "Over? My sacred jewel, it has only just begun," he thought. Then the coach stopped. Her eyes widened. "What now?" But then she realized her position and pushed away from him just as he let her go. She flew back across the coach to thump into her corner. Her "no" clashed with his. "Are you all right?" They stared at each other, both breathing hard. Robin turned away, glad of the excuse to lower the window and find out their situation. Deep in the mire, he thought, and he was not thinking of the road. "Are we stuck?" he called. "Not yet, sir," said Poick, "but soon. There's something ahead. A light probably coming through shutters." "Thank God. Tell the postillion to go forward carefully, and you ride ahead to ask for shelter." As the coach moved forward, Robin peered down, ignoring the rain on his head.
"How bad is it?" Sister Immaculata asked.
He pulled his head in, raised the glass, and turned to her, pulling out a handkerchief to soak up some of the wet in his hair. She offered him her own, a square as plain and white as his, but smaller. He thanked her and used it. "There's 6 inches of mud, and the rain showing no sign of ending soon. Pray, sister, that this place will offer shelter." She grasped her rosary.
"Of course. But how long will we have to stay?"
"Until the road firms up again. We're in no hurry, at least," he said, considering her. "I'm not." Her pale face was now tight. Had her only problem been the screeching Sodworth? He suddenly wondered if she were a thief. He'd taken her word that the trunk belonged to her. It was a very nun-like piece of luggage, to be sure, but perhaps he'd been too trusting. A faint whine startled him. He'd forgotten Coquette. He opened the hamper and grimaced. "She stained your cloth in her fright. Is that sacrilege?"
"No."
He extracted the still frightened dog, leaving the soiled cloth behind.
"What is it?" "A reminder of the cloth St. Veronica used to wipe the face of Christ. The sisters of St. Veronica care for the poor and injured in the streets."
Comforting the dog, he turned that over in his mind. A strange detail to invent. And if true, an extraordinary calling, and one that made her journey to England even more puzzling. Robin suddenly wanted to smash something. She was a nun, after all, and even to him a true nun was untouchable, no matter how beautiful, how enticing her body, how hotly she kissed.
"Your food's ruined, too," she said.
"Ours. A shame, that, for heaven knows what we'll eat tonight." Where the hell were they, and what was this place? It shouldn't be so dark this early, but the storm had brought its own night, and rain still blurred the windows. All he could make out was a long, low building on Sister Immaculata's side of the coach. He leaned across to lower the window. She flinched back.
"Sir."
He probably had brushed against her breasts, but no more firmly than a butterfly's wings. "I need to open the window to see better." She shoved him away.
"I'll do it."
She struggled with the catch, but he judged it wiser not to assist. When she loosed it, the window rattled down too fast. Just possibly one of those Italian curses escaped her. He'd forgotten those promising curses. A nun or not a nun? That was the question. Then again, not all nuns were virtuous. A saint or a sinner? Could a person be both?
"It's a long, low building," she said, "but it doesn't look promising."
He leaned to see, careful not to touch her. "It's here or nowhere, and it promises dryness, warmth, and a bed for the night."
"Beds," she corrected, raising the window again with a fierce push.
Robin settled back onto his side. "I meant nothing else, sister." She glared.
"You kissed me."
"You kissed me back."
"It was the storm. I was frightened."
"I was born during one, they say, and they drive me mad." He smiled at her bafflement. "Your headdress is awry. Would you like me to straighten it?" She blushed and gave it a sharp twist, but a dark tendril still showed, and her blush turned beauty into magic. Robin could hardly breathe. He hid his expression by considering the damage to the contents of the hamper.
"You must never do such a thing again," she said.
"Put Coquette in a safe container?
kiss me.
Or,
I thought you feared God.
Sister Immaculata,
he already has so many counts against me that a mere kiss, even with a nun, will hardly weigh an ounce.
Then why aren't you raping me?
Robin simply stared. I don't rape, he said coldly, and I promised you safety. The one sin I have never committed is to break my given word. She flinched back.
I'm sorry, but cease such folly. I will never succumb.
The future is a mystery.
No, it is ours to shape.
When she turned to look outside, Robin absorbed that statement with admiration and doubt. Mysterious as the future was, he predicted trouble for Sister Immaculata. She was alone and vulnerable in a dangerous world. He saw Poek arrive at the building. The people there would have to give him some sort of shelter, which could present some problems. Sister. She turned back to him, prepared for another fight. We may need a story.
Why?
Our hosts may wonder why a nun is traveling without female escort, especially with a man such as I.
You are every inch a rake,
she agreed. Then why come with me?
Lady Sodworth.
But her eyes slid away. Then I hope you've learned your lesson. She's doubtless enjoying a cozy supper before settling into a warm, dry bed, and we're faced with, at best, straw and soup. Come to think of it, I could be in the same comfort. I'd have stayed safe at Ardville, if not for you. Her eyes widened.
Are you suggesting this is all my fault?
Robin addressed the rapidly recovering dog. She's an unreasonable, argumentative woman, is she not?
I am not, she protested.
Facts are facts.
Before she could complain about that, the carriage jerked to a stop. Open the window and tell me what you can see. Muttering her opinion of him, she did so, letting in cold, wet air.
We are by a lane leading to the back of the house. Your man is talking to someone at the front door. The ground's covered with water.
Robin leaned across her to call, Fontaine?
Yes, sir,
said the valet, the very picture of dripping misery.
Are the wheels sinking now we've stopped?
No more than they were, sir. I am very wet.
So you are.
Robin closed the window and sat back.
Your master, Sister Immaculata said to the dog in his lap, is cruel and heartless.
Is it not entirely her fault, Coquette, that my poor valet is exposed to the storm?
Coquette yipped in agreement.
Sycophant,
she accused.
Termagant, he retorted, and I don't mean the dog.
Of course not. She never disagrees with you.
She doesn't always obey. Damn this never-ending rain.
Our story, he said. Here we are, travelling, despite bad weather, a nun and three men. Suspicious. They might think we're eloping. One winces at the possible punishments for ravishing a nun.
Like Abelard, she said, a glint in her eye.
You want to see me unmanned, sister?
Not yet, she said.
Terrifying woman.
I see Poek returning. Pray for good news. She turned to look out.
Even if these people wonder, they won't do anything.
Better not to raise alarm. We'll be brother and sister.
But we don't look at all alike.
Half brother and sister, then. Your mother was Italian,
Your father, also my father, was English. See my devotion to truth?
After a fashion, Petra said dryly.
Why, then, are we in a desperate hurry?
Yes, why? Robin thought at her turned head.
I could be more inventive, but let's say we're racing to your dear mother's deathbed. We're a staunch Catholic family. You discovered a vocation to the holy life and entered a convent. I like the way this ties together. Entered a convent in your mother's hometown of Milan.
She frowned, as if on principle, but said, I suppose that makes sense.
It is pure brilliance. It is not a matter for pride to be a brilliant liar. Consider it theatrical invention, then. I shall write a play about our adventures and call it The Rake and the Nun.
Perhaps she growled, but Poeck was approaching the coach, hunched against the rein.
We are both Bonchurch, she asked quickly.
We share the same father, so yes. Your mother's name?
Amalia.
It came out so automatically that it was probably the truth. And your name?
Hurry, Immaculata is not convincing for an English lady.
Not even with an Italian mother.
The English father would object.
She hesitated. So when she said, Maria, he asked, truth?
Are we still playing that silly game?
Yes.
My name is still Maria.
But the tilt of her chin suggested a half-truth at best. He let it pass and turned to let down his window to hear Poeck's report.
They'll give us shelter, sir, but there's only women there right now, so they won't let us in the house.
Women? I should have gone to talk to them.
More than likely, sir, Poeck said, dripping. The best I could obtain was a barn of sorts at the back.
Beggars can't be choosers. Can the coach get back there, or do we walk?
There's a cart track, but it's rough.
We'd better try it. But first, what did you tell them?
Just that we're English, sir. Couldn't help that. Me with my mangled French.
Damnation. I really should have gone myself.
Listen, Sister Immaculata is my half-sister Maria. My mother died, and my father remarried an Italian woman.
He saw, rather than heard, Poeck's sigh.
We've no choice. They're going to wonder about a nun with four men. Tell Fontaine.
Very well. But you better hope they don't want to gossip, or they'll get a dog's dinner of details. Impudent rascal, Robin said, shutting the window.
But right.
He generally is.
I apologize for our lodgings, sister.
I suspect I'm more accustomed to Spartan living than you, sir.
Then I look forward to your assistance in the night.
As she sighed and turned away, his conscience tweaked a little. But only a little. The coming night could be very, very interesting. But then the coach lurched down at least a foot.
Plague, take it. Pray fervently, sister, for the axle.
If God heard my prayers, she said bleakly, I wouldn't be here at all.